Welcome to this midweek message. I'm Drew Goins. Today I have with me Pastor Bill Booth. We are continuing our look at Bible characters from A to Z. Today we come to F. So do you have any honorable mentions for F? There aren't a whole lot of Fs in the Bible.
Yeah, now that you say that, I hadn't really come up with any honorable mentions. We do yes. that occasionally, but I failed to because you're right. There just aren't a ton of them.
One of them, the only honorable mention that I remember is actually immediately follows the story.
Is Festus?
Yes, the governor Festus, right after.
Yeah.
So
correct, yeah.
That's the only other one can remember.
I can't come up with another F one right off. I can't.
So get us to who are we covering today?
So Felix, we're dealing with Felix, and Felix was a governor, and we find him in relationship to the story of Paul. So we need to back up and understand Paul, and of course Paul being the great evangelist, but a bit of a rabble rouser in his own way, and tend to cause trouble along the journey. And so he stirred up the people in Jerusalem. They got so upset that they arrested him. And the crowds became so raucous and dangerous that the Romans were fearful that they were going to try to storm the jail and kill him, basically.
Yeah, so they had made a plot to kill him.
Yes.
I was reading this. They made a vow not to eat or drink until he was dead, which is a funny thing if you wait till the end of this story to see how long right. he was imprisoned.
But right.
We'll get there. Do you, yeah. you know what Felix means?
I do not. Tell me.
His name means happy, lucky, or blessed.
Really?
Which doesn't necessarily match up with our story today. And
no.
But we'll get there. So Paul is talking, and this plot comes out.
So Paul is in danger, and so the Romans don't want this disorderly. Look, they're not all that terrified that, you know, some random Jew gets killed. They're more terrified that disorder breaks out and rebellion and whatever. So to maintain order, they ship him off. And so he basically ends up under Felix's care, being sent there to try to in Judea, I guess, to try to, you know, protect him from what was happening with this crowd. And so this is what happened. So Felix is the governor at that time. But we need to talk about Felix for just a moment. Mm-hmm. So let's back up and talk about Felix. So actually, the research that I was able to find indicated that Felix had once been a slave. But he had made his way up the ranks and now was made a governor of this region. So
Judea and Samaria.
Yes, Judea, Samaria. So you have to understand that it says something about the personality of a person who can make their way from the ranks of slave all the way to this leadership position, especially in a very hierarchical system such as the Romans would have had. It would not have been termed a caste system like maybe we think about in India or other places, but it was pretty close. Mm-hmm. There were hierarchy families, there were people. And again, you have to remember that the Caesars and all these others talked about being divinely appointed by gods and small g little thing, or, you know, patroned by them. And so there was this weird sense of how these families fit. So to have worked your way up to this leadership, but we are talking about leadership in Israel proper. So these are distant leaders, far removed from Rome. So they're way down the order, and so that's, you're a little bit looser in the provinces, if you will.
Sure.
You know, they're willing to give a little bit more latitude. But you have a person who, one historian, Tacitus, is a historian who wrote about him, and he called him cruel, licentious, and base. So look, it's not like they weren't known to say some ugly things about each other, but he's writing about a governor of this region, and he all he can say about him is this. And look, you could have said a whole lot worse about several of the Caesars, but you didn't, because you would lose your head. But he was willing to come forward and say this about him. So let me give you another quick fun fact, because we're kind of painting him, and then we'll kind of get into some application and other things. So he became attracted to Drusilla. Drusilla was the daughter of Herod Agrippa I. So she had some Jewish background, Herod Agrippa being also appointed as a Roman ruler. And so he becomes attracted to her, and this may be one of the ways he rose to power. She was married at the time, and he pursued her to the point that she left her other husband and married him. And so that might have been part of his journey to the top, if you will.
His ascension to power.
Yes, his ascension had to do with marrying well and doing that. So you could raise the question, you know, was this true love or was this a, you know, political power grab that was beneficial to both of them for some reason? And so he becomes then this governor of the region. We were talking about Judea and Samaria. So Paul comes to him, and initially he refuses to hear him. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Can I tell you about the prisoner transport, though?
Yeah, do it. Do tell me. Yes.
Bible tells us they sent 200 soldiers.
Correct, yes.
70 horsemen.
Yes.
And 200 spearmen.
Yes.
All for a single prisoner transport.
Yes.
So, which kind of is crazy in my mind. It's like, this was not the president moving. This is
That's true.
It's a prisoner.
So what does that mean? Okay, that's a great question. So we look back and we'd say, oh my goodness, well, of course it's Paul. Well, we accredit to him that. They didn't care about Paul.
Yep.
They didn't know Paul. They didn't care about Paul. What they cared about was insurrection. They cared about rebellion.
Maintaining control.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so this was a power move on their part to say, you know, once again, you religious people are stirring up stuff and you think that you have control here. We are reminding you that we have control. And if indeed these other people are plotting, you have to remember also, especially as we get into Jesus' time, or as we're talking about, you know, going back up to Jesus' time, talking about the zealots, but even throughout this whole time, there was a great fear of radicals, of zealots. You also have to, this reminds us, if you've ever heard the term Masada, then you remember that this was the great rebellion of the Maccabees who held out, and they basically, it took Rome a long time to siege the last of them. By the time they got there, all of them were dead. Mm-hmm. But it became a victory of sorts that it took the mighty Roman Empire all this time, like over a year, to finally conquer Masada, which was this hilltop fortress. So these kind of rebellions were the things they were terrified of, because it shook the power base. And they were terrified as these leaders because Rome didn't want to mess around. And if you messed up and you caused a rebellion, it wasn't just the rebellers that were going down. You were going to be right next to them as the leader. So this is why it was literal overkill to send. It's a ridiculous amount of folks to escort one man.
A display of power to say,
yes,
don't get any wise ideas, guys.
Exactly. So, exactly.
And it also plays into maybe some of his decision making here in the next chapter or so.
Correct. So he initially delays hearing him. And then, you know, and again, some of this is playing games, and some of this he doesn't want to deal with it. And I imagine sometimes they must have really gotten frustrated, because here they are trying to run these provinces under this Roman rule, and these religious folks kept coming in and throwing all this what to them must have been more like nonsense, even though he probably had some Jewish background himself, or certainly was from the area, had an understanding for it, doesn't mean that he was a fan of
sure.
it. So he delays him, and part of it was that, you know, his accusers weren't there, and Paul has already made clear that he's a Roman citizen. So as a Roman citizen, he has rights.
Mm-hmm.
See, again, part of this is the larger geopolitical drama of what does it mean for the Roman Empire to function and do what they do. And part of that was to say, look, we aren't just coming in here and being mean and conquering you. We're providing roads for you. We're providing structure. We're providing governance. We're providing these things. And that there are benefits to being members, right?
Sure.
So he was a Roman citizen and ultimately was able to parlay that for his journey to Rome, which is a different – well, that was double-edged sword. We'll talk about that in a moment. But
indeed.
Yeah, but the point here being that, you know, his accusers weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
So then they finally send some accusers. But even after they accuse him, Paul points out, you aren't even the ones who accused me.
Yeah.
You're not even the guys who were there. You know, you are coming on behalf of some others, but you're not even the people that were originally accusing me. And that nobody pressed a charge against me officially anywhere. You know, so he's able to say all those things. But
just for reference, if you wanted to go back, Paul
writes
a letter in his defense of himself to Felix. You can start in Acts chapter 23, 24, and 25. We'll pretty much cover all the story we're covering today.
Right. And it'll bleed over into chapter 24 as well, and you'll find parts of that as well. But yes, that section of Acts is where you'll find all of this account. So yes, thank you. So then, you know, finally, we realize that Paul ends up staying there for about 2 years. So he has about a 2-year hiatus here. And, you know, a lot of the commentators or commentaries are, and ones writing about this, I should say, are saying that in all likelihood, part of what he's doing is he's trying, he's fascinated by him. Paul clearly is a fascinating image to him, but he's also, he's trying to elicit a bribe. So
yes, that the Bible even says that. I found one verse that I thought was super interesting in that.
Sure.
And then this is chapter 24, verse 22. Then right. Felix, who was well acquainted with the way, adjoined the proceedings. So he is acquainted with or familiar with some of this, but yes. There's still this intrigue.
Yes.
And then it even says he locked him up with hopes that he would bribe him. Yes. Like, I mean, that's in the Bible. So that's
it is. But let's say it this way. Again, recognize you have a wheeler dealer here in Felix who has somehow managed to maneuver himself from being a slave to being a governor. You don't do that without knowing things. Mm-hmm. You don't do that without knowing people. You don't do that without networking. You don't do that without having information and sometimes difficult information about sure. things and people. And so knowing about the way means that he knew that this thing had been stirring up problems, or he knew that these
followers of
unrest and all these things that have happened. But the growing amount of that made him probably believe there were a growing number of people who would have been interested enough to come and try to spring Paul. Mm. So in other words, he's probably thinking, hey, wait a minute, if I keep hearing about this,
the ransom may be better.
Yeah, right. There must be some people really care about this. Maybe, you know, they're going to come get him. So now, let me just do a quick caveat here about this idea about bribery. And I know that we kind of listen to this and we say, oh, that's just crazy. Look, this goes on all the time. This goes on in other cultures. This happens all the time. Multiple times doing mission work, I've run across this, especially in places like Haiti and even Africa and other places. And there's just places where you got to kind of give a little extra to get things through. Sure. And it was an understanding when we would send goods to Haiti that a portion of them were going to be siphoned off at the port. We just knew that. I mean, so you sent extra because you knew that. But I remember vividly as a summer missionary in college, and I went down to Houston. We were doing a special project other than summer. They called it Spots Missions. And so it was a spring break, basically, trip. But we went to Houston, Texas, and we worked with Mildred McWhorter, who was running this huge inner city youth initiative. And so she had kids from all walks of life and just desperate poverty, but she was bringing them into this place. They were being taught. They had recreation opportunities. Families were being fed. It was an amazing, amazing deal. So we're down there as a team. So she's got this group of college kids. So we were put on the task of cleaning out the freezer. Nobody had cleaned out for a year, you know. So we're digging stuff out of there and we're throwing all this stuff out or whatever. So we've accumulated this huge pile of trash out on the sidewalk. So one day, you know, this has been going on a couple of days. We've been cleaning all this stuff up. So, you know, a day or two later, she grabs me and says, I need your help. And I said, okay. So she handed me a box. And we started walking through the food pantry. And she's throwing all these items in there, all these food items. So we load this box. And I'm carrying this box of food. And she said, now follow me. So I followed her. And we went out on the street. We walked out to the curb in front of the place where all this huge pile of trash was sitting. And about that time, the garbage truck rolls up. And the couple guys jump out of the garbage truck who are the sanitation workers. They come over. They have a great conversation with her for a few moments or whatever. And she said, fellas, we got so much extra here. I'm just so happy that you're doing that. Look, I have some extra things for you. And she pointed at me, like, give them the box.
Okay.
And I just looked at her like, are you crazy? And she gave me the look like, we will talk about this later. Okay. And I gave them the box, and they took the box, and they picked up all the garbage and went away. And we walked back in the building, and I was just, the more I thought about it, the angrier I got. I thought, we are having to bribe guys to pick up the garbage.
Trash, yeah.
This is their job, you know, whatever. And it was just all welling up. I mean, she knew it.
Yeah.
And she just let me walk all the way back in. And when we got back in, she wheeled around on me. And I'm telling you, if she was 4'6", that was wearing heels. She was a tiny lady. She wheeled on me and she looked at me and she said, young man, you don't know how the world works. And these gentlemen, they need help with their families too. Hmm. And I am grateful for what they're doing. And the ministry here is way too important for me to have garbage piling up in front of my center. And the sooner you figure that out, the better off you'll be in ministry.
Yeah.
Turned around on her heel and went. And I just was standing there just like, what do you do with that?
Oh, yeah.
And it occurred to me that, you know, what she was doing was ministering. While I saw it as a bribe, she was actually ministering to that family in a way. But I'm just saying, don't kid yourself. This goes on all the time.
Yeah.
And he was looking for that. But I do think there was a side at which he was engaging. He was hearing this as interesting information. How deep that went, I don't know.
From versus entertainment versus like
yes.
sunk in and yes. bought into that.
Well, even is this something I can use? I okay. mean, he was a dealer in information, and he was a dealer in, and I mean, he had to be to get where he was. Is this information I can turn somehow? Is this my benefit? Yeah. Is this something I can do? He probably had all those thoughts. Now, was there ever a moment where it sparked something genuine? That's between him and God. We really don't know, right? And so even later, Agrippa says something about, you know, are you trying to persuade me to be a Christian here? You know, mm-hmm. he says that when he listens to Paul. But even that's more said sarcastically, I think, than it is genuinely. But here, you know, for this story, we have this interesting connection or this juxtaposition or these two things held in counterbalance of Paul, the great missionary, who is working to tell this message, and this political mover shaker over here. So both of them are trying to influence the world. They're just doing it two different ways, right? And for different reasons.
And I think the other thing with Felix, too, is he's got this, again, he's trying to control the Jewish population. So I think part of his decision was to say, I'm going to leave him in prison to keep these other people at bay.
Oh, absolutely.
Which gets me back to the other question, how serious were people on their vows, the people that made these vows to not eat or drink until Paul is dead?
Yeah,
Paul's been in prison for 2 years now,
so I wonder if
they're still around or not. But
I got to believe that vow went away pretty quick.
So
that only meant when he was in town.
Yes. What's the fine print on that vow?
Right.
So that's kind of the whole story. So then his time of governor ends, and he comes to, and almost the way I read it is like, they get these presidential pardons basically at the end of their time, and it's like they have the choice. Ooh, do I let this person go or not?
Right.
And he says, leave him in there. Is that guy? That's kind of how I read it.
Leaving Paul in?
Leaving Paul, this nonchalant.
Yes.
Well, I want to keep in favor with the Jewish people.
Yes.
I'm going to leave Paul in prison.
Well, let's add another side to that. This is a critical point, and we need to acknowledge this. Paul had this dream of going to Rome and sharing the gospel, and that had not happened.
Mm-hmm.
And he's now at this position, and his appeal, not only of being a Roman citizen, but he actually appeals to Caesar at one point. His appeal to Caesar, in essence, sealed his death. And the reason for that is that his appeal gave him the right to go be heard before Caesar, but he, again, didn't warrant the necessity of Caesar being real concerned about hearing him.
Mm-hmm.
So he spends some time in Rome as a prisoner, but after a period of time, basically it must have been one of those days like, let's just clean the books and get rid of these people because, you had your appeal here, but obviously there's a reason you're a problem, so we're just going to get rid of you.
It
was his death warrant. His doing that was like signing his own death warrant, but it also gave him the privilege of going to Rome and actually working with churches.
Finally get to Rome.
To get to Rome and work with churches that we believe some pre-existed him being there, and that, you know, he was able to strengthen and encourage them, and he also obviously did some writing, right, and did some work there. So, let's be clear about that. So I think part of this was out of his hands, that if Paul made this appeal, he had to honor it.
He had to hear it.
Yeah. Right, he had to honor it. And so he didn't have to do it quick, but he had to honor
it.
So
what's our takeaway from – do you have a takeaway from Felix?
I have a couple takeaways. I mean, I think one of them is the people that we encounter on our journey, that there will be people like Felix's, that people aren't necessarily going to think highly of them, and it's clear they have ulterior motives and all that sort of thing. That doesn't mean that in some way you don't have a meaningful opportunity to speak to them. You still have that opportunity.
Sure.
They get to make the choice. I think it also means that they also sometimes play a factor in, as I said, Paul wanted to get to Rome, and this was his way to get to Rome.
His means to do that.
And so he became a part of a larger mechanism that made that happen. And whether he meant to or not, he did.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes even these people unwittingly are part of the larger story that affects us, and maybe sometimes in ways that have meaning.
That's a good point, too. I actually used that in our previous podcast where we talked about God uses the intentions of bad people sometimes for his, sure. I mean, for yeah. his work. So that's, sure. That's yeah. a good point. I kind of landed on the same. So I put myself in Felix, and I made this probably oversimplified it, but I liked it. We can make the same choice as Felix. So Felix had a choice in my mind between unbounding the good news of Christ mm-hmm. through Paul mm-hmm. or bounding, keeping him in prison, mm-hmm. even if his imprisonment was protection for Paul mm-hmm. in a sense. I'll try to give him a pseudo pass there. But do we keep Jesus and his love and his good news bound up so that we can reach favor with our friends or our society or those outside influences? Or do we live for God's favor in that sense and say, we are going to unbound this, we're going to share this good news, even if it costs me something, even sure. if I lose that social step or I lose some societal bonus points or whatever that sure. is. I think that's kind of my application of putting myself in the story as Felix.
So another side point, and it isn't Felix per se, but let's just talk about the whole story. It's the religious leaders who are trying to get Paul killed.
Yes. Sadducees and Pharisees. Yes.
So we have a up-and-comer, a slimy politician, if for lack of a better term, who has weaseled his way into the halls of power.
Mm-hmm.
And he is confronted with an issue where the religious pure are worse political backstabbing, you know, conniving. I mean, they're people that he would have been proud to say, I would have been happy to have you on my dream team of how to, because, you know, so his image of Judaism writ large in a large part had to do with how he sees them deal with
the unhealthiness of of that.
Yes. And so by contrast, you have Paul, who should, by all rights, be right in the middle of them.
Yes.
Pharisees, yes. right in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
By all rights, should be in the middle of the Roman political stuff. He is a Roman citizen, and he is using that to, you know, help him maneuver. He knows all those things. But instead of all that, he speaks about his life as being a prisoner of Jesus Christ, a bondservant of one who he is willing to serve gladly, and who he says it is greater. You know, he must increase, I must decrease. For me to live as Christ, to die as gain. You know, he's hearing a radically different story from Paul than he is from the religious leaders. And I only say that to say that we live in an age where there's a lot of screaming by a lot of religious leaders. And if we aren't careful, we aren't going to sound much like Jesus at all. Mm. And the world will be hard-pressed to distinguish us from the machinations of political conniving and all that sort of thing when we you know, stoop into the mud, no matter how grand our intentions are,
sure.
that we find ourselves in that same place.
That's a really good point too. Man, this is good. I had fun.
Yeah,
so thank you for
me too. Yeah.
Thanks for doing that today. I hope you learned something out there. Stay connected, stay encouraged, and God bless.